Cities, what a pity, all those years spent building on a love so flimsy, so unreal. Lost cities, what a pity, all that time spent.
You are listening to Unspooled Real on GotchaMovies.com. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Knoll.
How's your day going today, Jenny?
It's been going well. I was really busy, but I got to talk to Jason Blum today from Blumhouse, which we're going to talk about Unfriended later. That's the reason I was talking to him, and it was amazing. I geeked.
I'm incredibly jealous because, again, as far as a business standpoint is concerned, he's definitely one of my idols in the film business. So that's really awesome that you got to chat with him.
Yeah, I know. Oh, man. It was I died. I fangirled. He knows two of my favorite horror movie directors that I would, like, die to meet and marry. James Wan and Ty West.
Yes. So it's like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon sort of thing.
Except I was, like, literally 1 degree away. I was like, you're on the phone with me.
you're in that loop now. So, yeah, speaking of Jason Blum, we'll be reviewing one of his movies later. Actually, two of his movies later, come to think of it. They're both
Blumhouse
Productions.
Oh, my God. It's all about him today.
It's all about Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions today. So, yeah, we got a twofer for you coming up. But before we get into those, what have you been watching this week?
That's a good question. I actually hosted a movie at Alamo Drafthouse last night for, it was Paprika, and it was a co-sponsored event with my film festival that I helped program for called the Austin Asian American Film Festival, and the event sold out. It was really great. The movie was insanely good, and now I need to go seek out more Satoshi Kon movies. Have you heard of Paprika?
I have not, no, other than the promotion that you have been doing on your social networks, but I had not heard of it prior to that.
Oh, right on. Okay. So I had heard about this like way long ago. I believe the movie came out in 2006, but 2007 in the USA. I remember in high school, I had a friend who was super into anime and she showed me the trailer and we really wanted to go, but it's rated R. So we couldn't go see it.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah, and it was showing at this like art house theater that was really strict about IDing, and so we just knew we couldn't get in. Anyway, so I've been meaning to watch it ever since, but 9 years later, I watched it for the first time.
Nice.
And it was
nice.
In a theater, and I got to host the screening, which was really cool.
And was it everything that you hoped it would be from years ago?
Yes. It was really, the soundtrack is spot on. And now I need to watch more Satoshi Kon movies. Specifically, I really want to watch Perfect Blue because that apparently inspired Black Swan a lot.
Yes, I have actually heard that. My co-host from Over in Her Movies, Octa Kozak, has mentioned that is a huge influence on that movie.
Also, I think he actually bought the rights to Perfect Blue to do a sequence in Requiem for a Dream.
Yep, also the same. Aronofsky is clearly a huge fan.
Yeah, we didn't even mention it was Darren Aronofsky. My bad.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Yeah, anything else you've been watching? Because I clearly have not been watching much.
Well, I watched these two movies we're talking about, and outside that, I mentioned Cop Car on the last one? I don't think I had seen it when we recorded.
I don't think so, but we are going to be reviewing that next week.
So. Oh, yeah. So we'll keep that one at bay. I also saw Dark Places, and I did not like it.
Yes, you can check out her review on the site. It's pretty scathing, and usually from someone who's not as scathing, usually more balanced. So that should probably tell you right there that the movie's not very good.
Yeah, I know. I was really upset. It felt like a made-for-TV movie, like a Lifetime movie, except way worse than even a Lifetime movie, the way it was shot. It reminded me of some first-time film student projects. It was so bad. I was like, I was upset.
maybe I'll do like a double feature Morbidly Curiosity watch when that and Fantastic Four come out to DVD and Blu-ray. I'll do like a torturous drinking game double feature to both of them. But I probably won't see that theatrically.
I really want to do the Fantastic Four drinking game that we sparked the idea for earlier today.
It should happen.
I'll just make one for the site.
You should. I mean, it sounds like it's the only way to get through that movie. But you know what? Everyone's been talking about that, and we haven't seen it, so we'll leave it at that. As far as movies I've watched this week, outside of the two we're going to be reviewing, not much. I watched the 1984 Oddity Silent Night, Deadly Night this weekend, out of just, I don't know why, because I had never seen it and I could. It's pretty trashy and mean-spirited for, I mean, a lot of slasher movies can be that way, but like it definitely was, but I don't know. I can't say I enjoyed it, but at least now I can say I've seen it.
It reminds me, just the title reminds me of a Fear Street novel, or I guess they're not really novels. They're like young adult books.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. No, the movie definitely wasn't that. And it's weird. I had a weird sense of deja vu that I had never seen the movie, at least not in its entirety. But when I started watching it, the first 10 minutes, I was like, I think I've seen this before. But I think maybe I started it when it was on Netflix streaming like years ago, but never finished it.
Oh, I hate when that happens. I was watching This Is 40, for the Judd Apatow career retrospective we had, and like halfway through the movie, I realized I had watched most of it probably when I was babysitting when I was younger from HBO or something.
Yeah. That movie's like, really forgettable too. So I don't blame you for...
Oh, not This Is 40. I'm sorry. 40-year-old virgin. Judd Apatow has too many 40 movies.
Oh, God. Okay. That movie's not forgettable.
I know. That's what dawned on me, that we were not talking about the same movie, because I know you like the 40-year-old virgin.
I love that movie. Yeah. No, This Is 40 is like a total, not train wreck. Haha. But a mess for sure.
That train wreck joke is so bad.
it's really bad. I realized as I was saying it, I was like, well, oh, that was lame. But oh well, I committed to it. So shall we move on to our reviews? Okay. Well, the first movie we're going to be reviewing this week is, as we teased in the last episode, is the directorial debut of Joel Edgerton, which is The Gift.
I'm really sorry. That's an urgent work thing. I'm going to have to step out for a couple of minutes, but it's not going to take me long. I'm going to literally be less than 5 minutes, less than that.
Can you just relax, have a drink? I'll be back as soon as I can. I'm sorry.
Gordo? Did he just leave us here?
Yeah, I think he did. Is this car?
He's leaving us alone in his house. He doesn't even know us.
Yeah, well... Maybe it's an emergency.
Well, he did say it was an urgent work thing. What is it that he even does? This is bizarre. Would we ever do this?
Well, no, but technically I would be at home to look after guests. If you had to go somewhere, he hasn't got anyone.
Honey, don't defend him.
Or whatever.
I'll tell you why he doesn't have a wife. He'd like to be married to you. He'd like you to be his wife.
Oh, God, Simon. Yeah.
Come on, honey. This guy likes you so much. Tell me you don't see it. Come
on. I really don't think that is the reason why.
Come on, honey. Why all the drop-ins and the stop-bys only when you're home alone? Look at this thing. Good Lord.
I think you're slightly exaggerating.
I think he's obsessed with you, honey.
Oh, it was so good.
It was good. So, wow, you just jump right into it. I left that space there. I left that space in breath to place the trailer in for editing, but you're just jumping right in there.
I
enjoyed this movie too, but I guess before we discuss it, we should probably tell people what the movie's about.
That's a good point.
So the movie, it stars Jason Bateman, Rebecca Hall, and Joel Edgerton himself. Jason Bateman and Rebecca Hall are a couple who just moved from Chicago to Los Angeles to Jason Bateman's character got a new job, and he runs into Joel Edgerton's character named Gordo and finds out that they actually went to high school together, and Gordo tries to at times creepily, but tries to befriend him, tries to do nice things for them, nice things for the family. And things just start to slowly seem off about him, and Jason Bateman reveals that he was a weirdo in high school, and this just horrible, torturous secret just kind of, you know, spirals into these people's lives. And I think what we should say first and foremost about it, like besides it being good, is that this movie is not the kind of horror movie that the advertisements made it out to be. It's more of an adult drama or an adult thriller, I would say, the type of movie that really doesn't get made anymore. I think really the last one to come out was Prisoners, which was a couple years ago, but like these type of movies don't usually come out very often.
Well, even Prisoners has the, like, excuse of being a mystery. The Gift, there is a mystery to The Gift, but it's a little bit more easy to figure out, and it's not as, like, hard-boiled detective type of mystery. This movie, I'm really surprised it got a wide release, but it's a Blumhouse production, so those usually get wide releases.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing too, like, you know, not to, you know, knock or dwell on Prisoners so much, but Prisoners also comes with, like, the prestige picture, like, prepackaged Oscar bait type chic to it. It also has a story that kind of deems itself important with a capital I. And, like, it does. It really does. And I feel
you're
like,
right.
And that's where that movie, you know, stumbles, I think, from time to time, as ambitious as it is. And The Gift, like, I mean, is so much smaller in scale, yet it works so much better, I think, to its advantage, because it's not like it is more genre-y, and it accepts its more genre elements to it, but it also is, like, again, really refreshingly adult and dealing with adult themes and things that just manifest from, you know, the things that you bottle up and they manifest that so much so to the point where they're just going to come out and explode. And this movie never veers, like, I say explode, but it never veers into, like, heavy melodrama or turns that, like, don't make sense. I feel like every single thing is very particularly laid out in this movie.
What's really interesting is the person I went and saw it with, he mentioned this, like, probably towards the end of the movie, he whispered it in my ear, and I was like, oh, you're so right. He said it reminded him of a Korean thriller a little bit, by the way the story was kind of laid out and kind of the mystery of it all. I thought he had a good point, and the Gift does feel more like something I would have seen in a foreign market versus the U.S. market as of lately, but it's so good.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like, it definitely reminded me, now that you mention it, it reminds me along the lines of Old Boy, like the twist beyond that movie, like this sort of, like, dark secret that's been kept and it's never, you know, it's very, again, and it's small and it's personal too, which I really appreciate. It's not the sprawling procedural or the sprawling detective mystery. It's just, it's very small. It abides kind of by the sort of small scale first film rules. Like, it's, there's more than three characters, but it only centers around three of them. Like, we really only, like, that's the focus of the movie. And by keeping it small, it's just a good first film for me, I would say.
Yeah. For made for $5 million in the sets they had. I thought the houses that they picked out were super gorgeous in the film. Oh yeah. And something you also mentioned is that this movie also isn't shot in very many locations. It's mostly shot in one house.
For the most part, yeah, outside of his work and, you know, a couple other places, it's pretty small. It's pretty small in scale. And the other house, his house, I say his house in air quotes, Gordo's, I mean, but yeah, there's not a lot.
Did you just hate Jason Bateman's character, by the way? Like, from the moment he got on screen, I was like, I hate this guy.
Well, Jason Bateman is, you know, really good at playing somebody you love to hate.
Like, yeah, no kidding.
He's really good at playing an asshole. Like, there's just no doubt about it. And what I thought was great, too, is they gave him, like, you know, he's still kind of that snarky, like, you see the sort of, like, Michael Bluth, I'm the smartest person in the room sort of thing about him. But at the same time, it was nice to see him in a dramatic role. Like, despite how much I hated his character, he was great. Like, I thought he did really, really good. And the other thing I thought was really interesting about this movie is there's a lot of comedic actors in this movie that have some small roles that were able to kind of branch out. You have Jason Bateman, you have David Denman, who played Roy on The Office, had a very small role. Katie Hazelton from The League, who's Mark Duplass's wife, is in it for a brief role as well. So it's just, you know, you have these people, really astute comedic actors, who are, you know, dipping their toes into something more dramatic and doing it successfully too. Like, there was, it didn't distract me at all. I was like, oh, you're in this movie, but it fits, it works.
Yeah, Alison Tolman's also in it, and she was on the Mindy Project. I know she was also on Fargo, and that's a more serious crime procedural show. I mean, I haven't watched it, but that's what I assume. But she was also in Mindy Project, and she's really great at doing drama.
Yeah, she's really good. I can't remember the actor's name, but it's the guy who plays Rugrat in The Wolf of Wall Street. He also was in Horrible Bosses. He's in it as well. He's the guy who Jason Bateman kind of beats for a job. But he's really good in it, like the couple scenes that he's in. He's mostly a comedic actor as well.
Yeah, I want to say almost that he pulled comedic... I mean, I don't know what Joel Edgerton was thinking, but maybe he pulled comedic actors for this movie because it was so small scale and they were more interested in doing something like this.
Maybe so. And it probably gave them the freedom to be able to cast them. Like he believed in them as actors, and in a bigger movie, maybe they'd be like, no, you can't cast Jason Bateman. He only does comedies. Like, but the fact that it is a smaller movie was able to get him. And is Jason Bateman in another like horror thriller movie? I feel like I've seen him in one before, but I can't picture it. I mean, I can picture it, but I can't put a name to it. And,
he was like... in Disconnect, which is a drama.
Disconnect.
Okay. Yeah, it was just a really small scale film. It was kind of like Men, Women, and Children before Men, Women, and Children existed.
That's right. And you mentioned that on our old podcast when we reviewed Men, Women, and Children.
Yeah, and I'm looking him up right now. He's also in State of Play.
I just ran past, and the Kingdom was what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
but I mean that's an action movie, but yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking of. But like as far as like thriller, and also Rebecca Hall is just to me proving to be just a phenomenal actress, and I don't feel like gets the credit she deserves for the things that she's been in. As much as others, maybe.
Oh, I loved her in this movie too.
I did too, especially because she's got the sort of burden of being
Jason Bateman's wife.
That, yes, but also being the sort of like, you know, the empathetic character, the one you identify with most because she's devoted to Jason Bateman's character. At least in the beginning, because they're married and they love each other. But like, you also see like this sort of, you know, this inherent sadness with Joel Edgerton's character with Gordo. And it's like, and she sees that and she's empathetic towards that. And so she's kind of our entry point in that, even though we know this character's off, I mean, kind of like Mark Duplass in Creep, though. not to the same extent. Like you don't, by the end of that movie, movie, you're like, no. I'm just saying, like, Joel Edgerton is able to evoke empathy from the audience and keep it, because we don't want to give away any surprises or twists in this movie, but we will say there's nothing that directly abandons that empathy the way that Creep does. They're two different movies completely, but like even the ending is, you know, it's ambiguous. So you're kind of like, I don't know. Where do I stand? And I think that's also kind of the best place to end it. But you do.
Oh, yeah. I was really shocked when the credits came. I was like, there's not more to this movie. Oh, my God. And it's such a gutsy ending.
It's really gutsy. And the other thing, too, like, and I think the reason I'm so happy that this movie did well, and I'm happy that audiences have been receptive to it, because again, the marketing made this look like kind of a generic home invasion movie.
Yeah.
And it centered around this idea of the gift. I mean, it's called The Gift. So like they centered an idea. Like I even saw a TV spot that was like, you know, that had all the doom, doom, and like all the like sizzle beats to try and make it like ramp up the tension. And the letters even came across the screen. What's in the box? And I was like, what's like that?
That's never even really a question in the movie. It's That's very
never a question in the movie, and I'm like, you're gonna play this off like it's the second coming of Seven. Like,
that's what's in the box.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's not Gwyneth Paltrow's head, people. There is nothing like that in this movie at all. It's very introspective in that way, which I appreciated it more. I appreciated that it wasn't this like lofty movie. I appreciated just so much about it, and it kept me on the edge of my seat from beginning to end.
Yeah, and talking back to Rebecca Hall's character, I really connected with her. And you said that she's like the empathetic character in this movie, and I feel like that's I feel like I'm sometimes her in situations when people are like just horrendously mean to other people. And I'm like, well, but they're really nice.
Yeah.
I always feel like I'm her in that situation. So the ending, I felt so violated at the end. I was like, oh man. I was like, that's me. Yeah. I don't know how comfortable I would be with that being me now. Oh, she's like such a relatable character. And I don't know how she married Jason Bateman. There's just like this point in the beginning, and I love how he doesn't like grill this point in, but obviously Rebecca Hall's character had some past problems and she's not working currently. And it just feels like Jason Bateman's character, his name is Simon, doesn't want her to go back to work either. He wants to be like the breadwinner, like the classic family with the baby. And it, you just feel like she's being like molded into this person that she's not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as evident by a kind of very subtle, but very just like, you know, just a quick little shot that shows why she is reluctant to be that person, which I really like. I like that there's not a lot of backstory with her, because Joel Edgerton has a trust in the audience to be able to figure that out. And there's more backstory with Jason Bateman's character, but like obviously the plot hinges on that. So it's necessary. And also, like, especially with kind of the secret, without spoiling what it is, I was subverted at every turn. Like I thought I had nailed it. I was like, oh, this happened, or this person did this, and never was I right for a second at any point. It completely blew past my expectations every time.
Yeah, I know. I was really surprised that I couldn't. Usually I'm so on point with guessing the endings of movies and just how the beats are going to play out with mysteries kind of like this. But I was kind of shocked by some of the things that happened, and it's good.
It's just really good. And I did not predict the overall ending, did not see it coming, and it fits. It's not like one of those out of left field endings.
No, like, it's not like Old Boy in that way.
No, not like
Old Boy. Where you're like, what just happened?
or even Prisoners, where you're like, I don't buy this. Like, where it does come out of left field, but you're like, this doesn't work. But this one totally works.
Yeah. Oh, The Gift is just a really good dramatic thriller. And you kind of nailed it on the head. And we don't get movies like this that often, which I almost want to say that's why it earned so much this weekend. It earned the number 3 spot, which a lot of people were guessing it wouldn't. It would open like lower, with maybe making like 7 million, but it doubled that almost by making 12.
Mm-hmm. And it's expanding to more theaters next weekend. It was a pretty modest, like 1800 theater count, and it'll go up to like 2000. And yeah, it did much better than, you know, it had a higher per theater average than Fantastic Four.
No, that wasn't very hard to do this weekend, apparently.
Well, no, because that movie was in, you know, almost 4,000 screens and just did not do well. But like totally ousted the other two movies, Ricky and the Flash and Shaun the Sheep. Like it just catapulted past it. So, I'm glad the marketing that helped this movie and did not hinder it, because like concerned, because people don't like to be duped. People do not like to be duped into seeing something that they're not expecting. I mean, look at Spring Breakers. Like, the people who hate Spring Breakers are people who, you know, did not get the sort of like romping Girls Gone Wild that they were led to believe they were going to get. And so because this movie was like so intent on being like a horror home invasion movie, I was like, oh, because it's not that, are people going to be concerned? Are people going to be like turned off by it? And they totally weren't. And I was really, really glad about that.
I think I would even go as far to say, like, if someone went into this movie, because you basically don't really know what you're seeing when you go into The Gift. Like, I had no idea what I could expect, because I thought the trailers looked awful. And then from the early buzz out of the Austin screening at South Lamar, a few people I trusted, including Taylor, who wrote a really great review for this movie, said, no, it's actually very good and you should go see it. And I was really suspect at first, but then after 3 weeks and seeing more and more advertising and more good reviews like pouring out, it went from not being on my radar to being 100% there, and I really wanted to see it.
Yeah, same here. I saw the first trailer I saw, I believe, was in front of Furious 7. And
oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, and my friend who I was with, who I've seen a lot of movies with this summer, kind of like gave me that sort of like like snoozer kind of like look and sound effect. And I'm like, maybe you're right. But I wanted to believe in it because, you know, I like Joel Edgerton as an actor and I wanted that to work. But again, it did look really bland. It did look really just like run of the mill. Like it almost looked like it wanted to be like The Strangers or something like that, you know,
It
just didn't look like the type of movie that it was. But I'm glad that it was that time.
And now it's like one of the most well-reviewed movies of the summer, I think.
Yeah, it's very well-reviewed. I think it's just more of a movie that nobody saw coming. Nobody saw it just... And it's refreshing that a movie can still come out of nowhere and surprise you in the way that we are bombarded with trailers and marketing and just like stimulation in our faces all the time. And like trailers give away everything. And there's like... Not that there isn't any surprise, but it's just nice to be like snuck up on and surprised. And that was my experience watching The Gift. I didn't know what to expect. I just heard good things and I was just not disappointed.
Yeah. Okay. So I just looked at it on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a 93%. It's the number seven highest reviewed movie of the summer after, let's see, more wide releases. Mission Impossible, Spy, Inside Out, Mad Max, yeah, and Shaun the Sheep. Like, clearly this weekend was a really good weekend since two of the best reviewed movies of the summer came out.
True.
But then also the one of the worst reviews movies of the summer came out too. Poor Fantastic Four. But I can't lie. I'm really glad that The Gift somehow made a little under half of what Fantastic Four made. And like you said, it had a higher per theater average. So clearly more people were pumped to see The Gift than they were Fantastic Four.
Exactly. And it was a smaller budget, clearly. $5 million versus $120 million. And it was refreshing. Like, I went to the, you know, like the quote unquote old people showtime on Sunday. Like, I went at 11:20 a.m. to go see this movie and in a suburb of Seattle. And there was, I mean, it wasn't packed by any means, but there was at least 15 to 20 people in there. And I was like, damn, that's pretty good for this type of movie at this showtime on this day. So it was heartening to see that there were people, you know, involved and people who were with it. Like, there were moments people were not laughing, but laughing to like alleviate the tension, sort of like, okay. Oh,
there was a lot of moments like that in this movie. I remember I drank a lot during this movie because I was in an Alamo Draft House, and like by the end of this movie, I was like, oh my God. And I had like the flailing like hands and I was like, what is going on? And then the person next to me was totally into it. It was this like couple on a date and her boyfriend was like literally like in her arms, terrified.
Oh my gosh.
It was good.
That's exciting. That's so exciting to hear that.
I know. I love when people get involved in movies.
I do too. And this is one worth getting involved in for sure. I think I've unpacked all my thoughts about The Gift, or unwrapped, you could say.
Clever.
Just keeping the bad puns going. I'm committed to it. No, sorry, go ahead.
I'm trying to put in my original idea for the podcast title in, but I don't know how to say anything about this unfriendly gift.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, this is getting bad.
I know.
Do you have any other thoughts on The Gift?
No, I loved it. And I definitely want to see it again, also because I went to the bathroom during the movie during one of the reveals, and I would like to see it again because of that.
Yes, I really had to go to the bathroom about halfway through this movie, but I did not go. I stayed and remained uncomfortable for the latter half of
this. This is probably like insane TMI, but that's fine.
It's okay. That's okay. Our listeners, they're acquainted enough with us that they can know. exactly. Okay. So I guess our next movie we are discussing is, by the time this episode drops, available on Blu-ray and DVD and digital HD. And it's another Blumhouse production and it is Unfriended.
Hey, Laura.
What's that?
Oh, hey, guys. What are you guys doing?
Did you guys buy your tickets 2 weeks ago like I asked you?
No.
Hey, Mitch, who's your buddy?
This is Laura's account. Who would hack into a dead girl's account?
All right, everyone, hands up right now. Who's doing this?
It's Laura.
Who did that?
It was me, okay? It was one of you guys.
It was me.
What? Why?
What do you mean, what? Why?
They put me in handcuffs, man!
Are you serious?
Where did you get this?
I didn't need it!
I swear to
you! Oh, you swear?
Put down the fingers!
Dude, look.
Laura. Oh my god.
Unfriended.
This is gonna be fun.
Rated R.
Yeah.
And Unfriended,
which I saw back at South by.
I was about to say, you saw it at South by Southwest. I literally just watched it this Saturday.
I watched it again this morning.
And it is a found footage movie. It is directed by Levon Gabriadze. I already know I'm fucking up this guy's name, so I apologize if somehow this guy is listening. But he's a Russian filmmaker.
He goes by Leo.
It's true. But I'm screwing up his last name. That's the big thing. He's a Russian director. It's his first American film. Browsing through his filmography, the other films he has directed prior are all comedies, which I thought was interesting. This movie called Lucky Trouble with Mila Jovovich, and this Yolki 2 and Yolki 3, which I was reading up on, that are kind of like the Russian New Year's Eve version of Love Actually, for lack of a better term. Like, they're these sort of like anthology movies that take place at New Year's Eve that are these comedies.
Mm.
So,
did you just see that he also is signed on to do Unfriended 2?
I did see that. This movie was a success. It made $54 million worldwide on a $1 million budget. It takes place entirely on a teen's laptop.
On her MacBook.
On her MacBook Pro. Yeah, clearly a MacBook Pro, because anybody who ever's used a Mac will know that it's a Mac.
I know. I was watching it on my MacBook today, and then things would pop up on the movie, and then they would pop up on my screen like they would on the movie, and I was like, whoa.
And see, if I didn't have to review it, have to review the Blu-ray disc, mm-hmm. should and assigned to, I did want to watch this on my laptop, because I feel like it would have had a more effect like that, I think, than watching it on the big screen, which is the opposite, because I prefer to watch anything on the big screen as opposed to my laptop. But this one in particular, I feel maybe would have benefited more on my laptop.
It did benefit more. I had seen it on the big screen, and I wasn't a huge fan of it. I'm not the biggest fan of it still, but I think I enjoyed it more the second time around on my computer screen. Also, I feel like I noticed a little bit more things when I paused it, and I could actually search around on the computer screen and see little tabs and all that.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause there's a lot of tabs open. I mean, these teenagers are clearly I don't know what they're doing, but there's 10 tabs open at once. They're Skyping with 6 different people, which why do you need to Skype with 6 different people when you're not recording a podcast? What would be the purpose of that? I mean, I don't know.
Do teens do that?
I don't know, because this is, we were brought up in the teenage age of AOL Instant Messenger. So I don't know, if that many people talk on Skype. I certainly talk to that many people on, Hotmail Messenger, but not.
Oh, yeah. I have been in chat rooms like that that wouldn't surprise me now that I think about it. Since these people grew up on Skype, they would probably have insane chat rooms. But what I thought was really funny is in the beginning of the movie, two people, Blair and her boyfriend Mitch, are having a conversation, and then 4 people just come bombarding in on it.
Well, yeah, and I don't know necessarily the logic, but behind that, because I'm how did they enter the conversation if they didn't accept the call?
Well, that's the whole thing. I think they mentioned that in an iMessage later, where they're why'd you answer? And they're I didn't answer.
Oh yeah, because it's the glitch. So this movie, takes place on this teenager Blair's laptop entirely in real time, unbroken takes, or at least edited to seem unbroken.
Mm-hmm.
It's takes place on the 1 year anniversary of the death of one of her friends, committed suicide, this girl named Laura, and they are haunted, or at least she specifically is haunted by the Facebook page of Laura. Starts typing to her, the Skype handle starts, talking to them, and basically starts haunting them and offing them one by one. So it's a slasher movie online, essentially, with a found footage aspect.
Yeah, it that's basically a good way of describing it. There are a few movies that are like this out there, but they're a lot smaller scale and they didn't come out to as many theaters. And I don't think they're as technically well done as Unfriended is. As much as I don't really care for this movie, it's probably, you said you actually probably like it more than me.
I think I do like it more than you.
Yeah. It's technically so good and a lot better than all these other on the computer found footage movies I've seen.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I like. I had no expectations for this movie at all. And I think because it was technically well made, I think the teenagers for the most part are convincing, especially because they're not teenagers at all. The girl who plays Blair is 3 years older than we are. So it's just like, okay, clearly you're not teenagers, but I thought they did fine. And also one of the aspects I know you didn't like about the movie didn't hinder for me. You mentioned that you felt this movie was really mean, and I can understand that. I want to get into that. But for me, I guess it is misanthropic because all these kids are terrible. Like, all these teenagers are terrible, and they did a terrible thing, and they all get their comeuppance. And I don't know. I don't see the repercussions of that. But at the same time, you find out that the deceased, who was allegedly making all this happen, was also kind of a bully and was also kind of a jerk. So at that point, is there anybody to root for in this movie? But also at the same time, as I mentioned in my Blu-ray review, we did not get 10 Friday the 13th movies because of likable characters. We got 10 Friday the 13th movies because people like to see Jason Voorhees slash and hack teens up in increasingly embarrassing ways. So by that shaky grounds, this movie worked for me. Like, take it or leave it, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But like, by that logic, this movie worked for me.
I think, watching it a second time, I actually didn't mind that as much going in and knowing that, but going in and not realizing that even the quote unquote ghost was kind of a bitch. There was like zero people to root for, but I like a good slasher, and I like when, like, I see my teenagers being chopped up, although I don't like the Friday the 13th franchise that much.
I don't either, but I
prefer Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween, because there are good characters in those movies.
Or Texas Chainsaw Massacre, even.
Ooh, that one's good, too. But I don't know. It was just the fact that the way it started off kind of set me off kilter when I watched it at South By. It was my first South By movie this year I screened. And it's Blair and Mitch, and then they're, like, fooling around on camera, but not really fooling around. And then Mitch, like, points his sword at the camera, and he's like, take your clothes off. And I'm like, that's so rapey, I can't even, like this guy or her for, like, just laughing along with it.
That's
like,
understandable.
Oh my God, it's so funny. And I'm like, no, it's not. And this is, like, one of those things where I guess maybe I feel like teenagers are like this now. Maybe it was too real for me.
And I feel teenagers are, and I don't like that. Like, I don't like that they are like it. I like that it was kind of a realistic depiction, but also all teenagers are shits. Like, I'm sure you were a shit. I was a shit. Like, at some point, you know, in some way, whether it be small, major, and most grow out of it. Most do.
Fair enough.
And so I don't know. I guess that aspect is, like, as much as, like, yeah, these characters are annoying, and again, they get their comeuppance, and I see nothing wrong with that. I also like this movie, like, not to a huge degree by any stretch, but, like, it kind of has a point of view anyway. I mean, it's relevant, and it's relevant in a way that I don't think that's gonna date the movie, but not badly. I think this movie is, like, perfectly of its time, and it deals with cyberbullying, which I think is, you know, incredibly relevant. And something, and maybe even a cautionary tale for somebody who, like, does that type of stuff, to be like, hey, watch this movie. Things come back to haunt you. It's like, and I mentioned this also in my Blu-ray review. It's like that line that Erica says to Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network: the internet's not written in pencil, it's written in ink. And that this movie pretty much reaffirms that.
Someone should have told Josh Trank that last weekend.
Yeah. Fair point.
He should have seen Unfriended.
He should have seen Unfriended or The Social Network, but you know, yeah, that's either here or there. But anyway, the movie it surprised me. I found it comical at times. Clearly this director has had his fair share of comedies. So, especially like the way the music is incorporated in it. Plus there's clearly the music incorporation is great. And clearly like there's a fair amount of like, you know, don't go in there moments. Basically this, like, you're a dumb teenager. Why would you do that sort of things that almost every slasher movie has to some degree or another.
Yeah, I think, okay, here's also another thing, is watching it on a computer screen that was a little bit easier to digest in than watching it in a, like, giant theatrical screen, is that there's a lot of yelling in this movie at one point, mm-hmm, where it's just, like, a ton of children are yelling, and I was just, like, sitting in my chair when I was watching it, but, like, on my computer, I could, like, quiet my sound a little bit more, and I was like, okay, I don't have to hear them yelling that much.
I also thought the incorporation of sound in this movie, like the sound design, is really, really well done.
Movie is technically really great,
because like, especially there's a scene where the ghost or the glitch, whatever it may be, makes them play a game of Never Have I Ever. And that scene to me was like, It definitely had me go. Like, I know where it was going for the most part, but it's like the fact that they ask a question and they're counting down, and like it's the Skype instant message, the like bloop bloop sort of thing, and it's like, yeah, you hear it count down, and it's just like, ew, that's eerie to me. And so again, I think this movie was designed to elicit scares, and you know, it's rehashing these old tropes but in a refreshing way, and a lot like Creep, as we talked about the last episode. I bought the found footage of this movie, and that's always a tough sell. That's always my biggest issue with found footage, is I have a hard time believing the sort of things that happen. You know, I have a hard time buying the gimmick because somebody clearly edited this footage together. It's found, then why is it so like crisply edited? That doesn't it just doesn't make any sense. And so, because this movie, you know, much like Creep did, where it's like the start and the stop of the camera was like natural areas, like this one, it takes place completely in real time. I would believe that if it was being filmed and somebody found it as is, would be this way. Like, gaps in logic and of the characters aside, I still believe the gimmick.
And I think that actually is what the new ending that they had. South by had a different ending,
and you mentioned that.
Yes. And I hated the ending. I thought it really cheapened the movie, and it didn't really fit. I guess this is not really a spoiler because it's not the real ending. But the Blair, the main girl, ends up walking out into a highway. Like, it's like a road, a busy road. It's not like necessarily a highway. It's like a country road, almost like the one in Pet Sematary. And a giant semi hits her, and like, she like places her computer perfectly on the grass so you can see her get hit by a semi. And I felt like this was this suspense of disbelief where I was like, no.
Yeah. It's that Cloverfield moment when he drops the camera and goes back and picks it up. Like, what? No.
Yeah. And I'm like, why the hell did you bring your computer out here and then purposely drop it so people can see you get run over by a semi? I didn't believe it for a second. And I think that kind of killed the movie for me at the end, because I think in the theaters I was a little bit into it and I was fine with it until that scene, and I was like, you know, no.
Yeah, I'm with you. If I saw that ending, I would be like, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense. And without spoiling how this version, the one that you will see if you go out and watch this movie after listening to this episode, it never leaves the bedroom. I'll just say that. It never leaves her bedroom, which helps the suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, I thought that was a lot better. And I also think that they tweaked some things at the very end to make it flow a little bit better as well.
Oh, good. That's good to know. But yeah, I mean, I guess just for me overall, had zero expectation for this movie. You know, just thought it was going to be another found footage movie. Was curious, like I always am, but was never enough to go out in the theater and see it. And fortunately got assigned this review and ended up enjoying it. Will I watch it again? Probably not. But like, I thought it was a pretty technically well-made and efficient movie. And it's only 83 minutes. So that's a plus too.
I saw it twice, and I never thought I would watch this movie again.
Well, yeah, but that's...
Also, you need to try out my drinking game. I have an excellent drinking game on Gotcha Movies right now for this movie, and you would probably die of alcohol poisoning before you figure out if it's Laura Burns or not.
I did.
Or Barnes.
I did read the drinking game. It sounds deadly, though. You writing this game...
I think it's actually fine until the very last one, which you mentioned a countdown earlier. And the last thing is, don't stop drinking when there's a countdown going on. And I counted how many there are. There are like 8 in the film.
There's a lot towards the end of the movie. At least you got to write a drinking game for a good movie and a short movie. I had to do a drinking game for A Million Ways to Die in the West, the unrated version, which was 2 hours and 15 minutes of my life.
Your, that drinking game is still funny. I don't know if mine's as funny as yours. I tried.
Oh, I have to look at it. I don't even remember all what I wrote, but I was kind of being snarky because
I didn't like the movie. Well, I thought I was kind of being snarky in this one, but I was like, don't stop drinking when a countdown's going on. It's like, you're going to die.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Like I think I mentioned earlier, it's like the GOP debate drinking game. Like, health officials came out and was like, don't play this game. You will die of alcohol poisoning if you attempt to play this game.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that's pretty bad.
Hopefully no one dies of alcohol poisoning through my drinking game. And hopefully you take it as a joke about the countdown if you actually end up trying to do it. Because you really probably should stop drinking if there's a countdown.
You probably shouldn't. And if you're going to do it, stick to beer.
Yeah, this is definitely a beer drinking game. I kind of had that in mind.
Yeah, don't do hard liquor. That's bad. It's bad for everyone.
Oh, yeah. Well, you would be dead by the time. I was talking with Ryan about this. I was originally going to do every time you see a glitch on the screen.
Oh, my God.
Take a drink. And I was like, oh, my God, you'd be dead.
Yeah, full disclosure, the first glitch starts with the Universal logo. So...
there's a lot of glitches. I tried to tally them throughout the movie, and I was like, well, it's sinister, but it's funny. And I stuck with the countdown one instead. But I thought I was being really clever with my Teen Wolf Easter egg, because I found it.
Which no one's going to know unless they watch Teen Wolf. I mean, I don't know. I never watched it, nor did I. It wasn't ever on my radar, so I don't know.
Well, I feel like I could probably spoil it here. It's one of the tabs.
Oh, it makes sense. Plus, also, maybe the age range that this movie is mostly going to target does watch Teen Wolf or has seen Teen Wolf. So I don't know, but.
Well, Blair, played by Shelley Hennig, she's in Teen Wolf. Yeah.
Yes. And we're talking about the show that's on MTV. We're not talking about the Michael J. Fox movie.
No, we're talking about the hilarious show on MTV, which I watched a few clips from today just out of curiosity. And it looks really funny.
Really? I just. Most things on MTV, I just cannot bring myself to watch.
I've actually heard Teen Wolf is pretty good from multiple sources. So after watching those clips today, I became moderately interested. A heavy influence on the moderately part.
Yes.
I could tell you were speechless for a second.
Oh, no, I was distracted.
Okay, good. I was like, oh, no, I just scared you.
No. I wasn't. What? No, I don't know.
No, it's not like I said, oh my God, I really want to watch The Vampire Diaries right now. Which actually I have heard it's good too, so.
Yes, I have heard that show is good as well, but it's not for me. But anyway, do you have any other thoughts on Unfriended?
Honestly, give it a shot. I gave it a second try and I didn't hate it as much as I thought I did. I still think it's a really cruel movie, and I think there's nobody to like, and I think all these kids are shitheads. Specifically, what's her name? Jess. Oh, I hated that girl. I was like, you need to just go.
Which is funny, because she was on a sitcom that I used to watch back in the day called Still Standing.
Really?
And, yeah, and because she's our age, like, I had a total, like, crush on that character. Because I was looking up, I was like, who have I seen all these people in? And I was like, oh my God, that's that's her. That's crazy.
She's also on The Secret Life of an American Teenager.
Which I never watched.
I watched the first season until the having the baby part, and I just gave up.
That was Shailene Woodley's show, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my God. So crazy that she was on that show still.
Yeah. Because she turned out to be a great actress. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. But Yeah, and obviously, as you could tell, I liked this movie much more than Jenny did. And again, dirt low expectations. But as far as, like, you know, it's been a good year for, like, genre movies, for horror movies, for thrillers. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a minor solid entry into the found footage genre, and one of the better ones that I've seen recently, other than Creep, which, if you have listened to the episode, last episode, you know that you should just go watch that immediately, because you can. It's on Netflix. But
Creep is great. Creep is hilarious.
Creep is great. Unfriended is funny at times, too.
Unfriended has its moments.
It does. It does. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Liked it. I know. I'm trying not to be, like, super harsh.
No, it's okay. I understand. And I gave up on found footage long before you did. So you've seen more than I have, and have probably seen, like, better gems that maybe people didn't discover.
Oh my God. There's a movie. Let me tell you about it. You can find it on YouTube. We should probably do it for an episode. Noroi, Noroi. It is a Japanese found footage movie. Scary.
Interesting.
So good.
I would be down to do that in a future.
Oh my God. Yeah, we should do that. It's on YouTube. It's on YouTube. Easy find.
That I see no reason why we shouldn't at some point or another. But anyway, basically, to take away from this episode, we both highly recommend The Gift. We're split on Unfriended, but
you should watch it.
But you should watch it if you're interested, for sure.
If you like horror movies, and if you're a sucker for found footage like myself.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. And again, it's only 83 minutes. So, you know, if you don't like it, you didn't waste that much time. So,
no. If anything, the movie is really technically great. That's what I think I complimented it on in my review. I thought it's very smooth, because usually found footage is so shaky, it gives you a headache, but it's like an easy watch. And yeah. I kind of like the way the sound editing, you mentioned it earlier, like the clicks and all that, it works. Mm-hmm. Although I think the people type a little bit too fast.
Maybe so. Oh, and I love that they I love and hate this. I love that it's so accurate, but I hate that people do this. They're like sort of text talk when they say please, like PLZ.
Like, I hate that.
I hate it too. But
it's
like,
so high school, like,
it's
chat
completely
room.
Accurate, though. Like, it's totally. And plus, you know, they're also typing frantically because they're scared. So it just worked. It worked. It worked for me in that way. And you, like you said, it's very technically astute. The Blu-ray transfer and the sound mix on it is just, it's really, really good. It looks great. But yeah, I'd say that concludes our fifth episode of Unspooled Reel, which is coming at you less than a month away from the previous episode. So hopefully these episodes will start coming out more frequently. As always, you can check out our news reviews, this podcast, and everything you can find at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gotchamovies. If you like this podcast, you can check out the other podcast that I co-host, Over Under Movies, with Akda Ege Kozak and Eric McClanahan, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. You can also follow both of us on Twitter. I am at Ryolli90. That's R-Y-O-L-L-I-E 90.
And I'm at Jenny Lee X33, and it's JennyLeigh, the letter X, and the number 33.
Anything else you want to plug?
You can go to gotchamovies.com every day for awesome editorials and news and such. And we have really cool contests going on right now. I don't know if it'll still be going on when this is over, but we are giving away Unfriended, and that's going on until Monday. And we're giving away 3 Blu-ray copies, so you don't have to even buy it. You can just get it for free.
Yeah, enter our contest. It's a gorgeous-looking Blu-ray. You got nothing to lose. And if you don't like it, you could just redeem the Ultraviolet and trade it into your nearest FYE or whatever, like, used video store you have. So, you can't go wrong. This podcast will be out before Monday. So, give it a shot. We got a lot of reviews coming out this week on the site for what comes out this week? The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Straight Outta Compton, a couple others, I think.
Probably a couple others. I haven't actually looked at the schedule this week yet. But we had like Cop Car on the site, The Gift. We already have that up. Shaun and the Sheep movie, which everyone should go see because it didn't make very much money. And it is the best well-reviewed movie of the summer. So.
Yeah, check it out. I want to check it out too. I haven't seen it yet. So I'm excited to do that. And stick around for our next episode, which hopefully will drop next week. We will be reviewing Cop Car, which we've already spilled the beans that we're going to be doing. Jenny has already seen it. I have not, but it expands this weekend from its three theater run, and it also will be available on VOD. So
no excuses.
Yes, you should watch it and then listen to us talk about it next week.
But, yeah, Cop Car is great.
So, all right. Well, she's already had her opinion laid out. So maybe you don't even have to listen to the next episode.
No, you can. You should listen to us talk about it more.
You should. We could all use a little Kevin Bacon in our lives.
Who can't? Oh, if we're just like Kevin Bacon.
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy. But as always, thank you for logging on and talking movies. It's been great.
Always.